is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us, gotcha, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Well, look at that. The Pedestrian Podcast is back after a somewhat enforced, somewhat less so enforced, a few week break. This week's podcast, as ever, myself, Stuart Court, is joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good. Doesn't feel like it's been a few weeks. It feels like we did this podcast 2 days ago and it just deleted itself, and so we have to do it all over again. So maybe for the listener, it feels like a few weeks ago, but for yours truly, it feels like just 48 hours ago we were talking about exactly the same things.
Yes. No, that just sounds far too far-fetched for a smoothly run operation such as this podcast. But yeah, over the last few weeks, the Seahawks have moved to 7-2. Is that right?
I think so. Sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds about right. After a defeat when I was there against the Baltimore Ravens, a nervier than it should have been win in Atlanta against Matt Schaub and the Falcons, and then obviously this past week against the Buccaneers, and with real life and travels and tribulations taking over, pulling the curtain back a little bit, myself and Adam have not watched much of the last 2 weeks, so we're just going to move right on into 49ers and bring in the threads and storylines of what Seahawks 2019 currently looks like. Adam, but this is the biggest game of the 2019 season, and arguably in the last couple of years in the regular season for this Seahawks team, how it looks and feels compared to what it did the last time the Niners were this good, in layman's terms, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the way this game goes is certainly going to shape the season for both teams from here on in. You know, we have watched the games in the last few weeks, but we've not been able to talk about it particularly. So there's lots of things that you can pick up on from the last few games that kind of a common threads that are running through both teams, really. And I guess it's how those are going to manifest themselves on Monday is going to make the difference. And yeah, I mean, a loss this week, and you could almost start looking over your shoulder at that kind of sixth seed, especially if some of the results don't go our way with regards to the Rams and the Eagles and the Vikings. But a win, and that would suggest that this is a team that maybe can push on to win the NFC West, which would be a heck of an achievement given what we thought was going to happen in the offseason.
Yeah, it would be. But also, we're facing the 49ers, which obviously there's a lot of hype around them, obviously with Jimmy Garoppolo being healthy, Kyle Shanahan being one of the best, if not the best, offensive coach in the in the league. And obviously another investment on that defensive line in this past April's draft with Nick Bosa, and they've kind of, for all the teams that were hyped, they're the one that have lived up to it and stand after what happened in Baltimore on Sunday night. There's the only undefeated team as the league calendar switched over to November. I mean, it's a daunting task, it's daunting tasks on every facet of that team that we face on Monday night, isn't it?
It is. It was weird. I heard an interview with, I think his name's Grant Cohen, who's a San Francisco beat writer. And the way he was talking, it sounded like it's going to be a cakewalk for the Seahawks. He couldn't muster a positive word about the Niners. I don't know whether he's got like a personal vendetta against Shanahan or so, you know, or whatever. But you know, he was saying Sherman's not good and Garoppolo's fine, and their defense is giving up 5 yards a clip and whatever. But I mean, there must be a reason why the Niners are the last undefeated team in the league, and they've seemed pretty bloody good whenever I've watched them before, especially on the ground. Yeah. And yeah, I think this is going to be, they're going to be a load, that's for sure.
Yeah, the running offense for the 49ers has at least 98 yards on the ground in every single game, the lowest total coming back in week one when obviously they were kind of finding themselves, and obviously we had our own trials and tribulations in week one against the Bengals as well, which has kind of looked a bit sillier than them. But obviously that, their investment that they've made over on the defensive line with Nick Bosa being the latest one, arguably the best of the lot. But they've got Arik Armstead, you've got DeForest Buckner, you've got Solomon Thomas kind of finally living up to some of his draft stock, if not all of the draft stock for the third overall pick. And against the unit, Adam, which this past Sunday, despite having a left tackle with one arm and missing their long-time centre for the first time this season, obviously it's going to carry on for the rest of the season with Justin Britt's injury. It's switching around. Like in the last couple of years, this matchup would be a bit gnarlier and a bit less one to look forward to. But with how the Seahawks O-line have looked in recent memory, obviously what you've done for me lately kind of thing, it could be a fun one to watch on Sunday.
Yeah, well, the first one of those threads that we can talk about from the past few weeks is that the offensive line has looked much more stable. And you sent me a message last week, I think after watching the Tampa Bay game, which was kind of inferring that perhaps, Britt being replaced by Hunt and there not being that much of a drop down in the quality is whether what we were talking about earlier in the season, where a lot of the problems were coming on the inside of the line versus the outside of the line. Maybe that is coming to fruition. And I mean, the line as a unit, they look pretty solid in the past few weeks, which is is good to see, and it's giving Russell Wilson that bit of time, which has probably elevated him from looking like a very, very good quarterback to someone who's playing like the number one MVP candidate across the league at the moment.
Yeah, but this D-line possibly offers more of a rounded thing than what the Bucs. Obviously the Bucs have Sue and they have Vita Vea, Jason Pierre-Paul in flashes, really, what one bit I saw. But this is one that's going to be at it from snap one and attacking us in different ways to what the Buccaneers did.
Yeah, I mean, it's essential not to fall behind by too much in this game and have the golf schedule. I mean, we've spoken a lot and bemoaned the running versus passing or whatever, but this is probably a game where their run defense is certainly weaker than the pass defense, and you don't necessarily want to be in a position against that front seven where they know you're going to pass because you're going to have to pass because you've fallen so far behind. That's where they've eaten against teams like the Panthers, and they've just absolutely marmalized them. So that's a position that you really don't want to get yourself into. But if you are going to have a player under center who's pretty aware and very, very knows full well what it's like to be under pressure for 60 minutes, is Russell Wilson. So hopefully he'll be able to step up and lead something, and with Schottenheimer and Carroll, they can put a game plan together that can negate what they're going to do in the same way as they did in the second half against the Steelers, for example.
Yeah, and I think one of the threads a couple of weeks ago after the Falcons game, coming out of that, and what happened in that, especially that second half, is that they were facing the worst pass defense in the league, and Russell Wilson only threw the ball six times. I mean, yeah, we run the ball to drain the clock and everything, but there's an opportunity there there was more opportunity there to keep the clock going by in the past. And then this past week, we faced a pretty sturdy run defense, and while Carson did get another 100-yard game, I mean, five touchdowns and barely misplaced the pass all day, they kind of went at the opposition at their weak point. You kind of expect and hope that that's how they approach this game and give Carson and Penny and Procise, and maybe even go against their aggressiveness and give Russell Wilson himself a few carries after what they did in highlighting the opposition's weakness last week, Adam.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to run the ball well this week and have to do it at the right times and effectively. And yeah, it's a weird one because they're obviously a very, very good team, but normally when you play against teams like this, you think, right, the key is we've got to keep their offense off the field, long drives. But I'm not even sure it is that kind of game. They're obviously really good, but I kind of can't work out why they're so good.
They just do everything really well. And also, if you look at their schedule, it's not been the harshest one. Obviously, true. Tampa Bay in week one, the Bengals, we all know what they... I mean, the Bengals rushed for 25 yards against the Niners. They beat the Steelers despite Garoppolo turning the ball over five times. They beat whatever the Browns are handsomely on Thursday night. They did a number on Jared Goff. They won in the rainstorm in Washington, and that's just a nightmare. The most impressive win was what they did. I mean, was Kyle Allen, and Kyle Allen is not an NFL quarterback for me anyway. And they put 50 points up on that Panthers defense with Luke Kuechly and all the pass rush they've got success from this year. They kind of negated that, and I think that's the game which they can kind of hang their 2019 hat on more than anything. And obviously, they survived somewhat against Cardinals last week, so the schedule's not been a murderer's row, but they've still won by 14, 24, 28, 13, and 38. So they're handling teams, which is something which, despite having a 24-0 lead under their belt this year, this Seahawks team is yet to do, despite winning 7 of their 9 games, Adam.
Yeah, it's a fascinating game, and I'm really looking forward to watching it. And, you know, I've always said to you, I kind of prefer watching the road games. I find them more exciting than the home games for some reason. Monday night, I mean, it's going to be completely ruined by Tessitore and Booger, who are just two of the worst. I may actually watch it on mute. It's going to, because they really could do my head in beyond belief. But yeah, I've not watched a full 49ers game, and I'm kind of looking forward to working out why they're so good and where they're so effective, and to see if the Seahawks can kind of hang with them. Because if they can hang with them and keep it close, like the Cardinals did, if there's one thing you can say about Wilson more than anything else, is that he's got the coldest of cold heads in the fourth quarter. And I kind of feel that if we're going to lose, we're going to lose it in the first half, and if it's a game in the second half, we're going to win.
Wait, so you're saying we can win this game in the fourth quarter, Adam?
Sadly. although what I would say to counter that, the 49ers can win it in the first quarter against us, yeah. I would say. Because if they jump to a 14-point lead and then just keep running it and running it and running it, especially as we saw on the injury report that Jadeveon Clowney didn't practice yesterday, which is effectively Wednesday. So not something to be overly concerned about just yet. But he has been an absolute wrecking ball and another thread to talk about from the past few games that... he's basically carrying that defensive line by himself for the minute, especially in the run game. If he's not there, then that could spell severe danger, and that's when the game could run away from us. And then it doesn't matter who you got on the field. You know, if Wilson has to, you know, take a 7-step drop every time, and then Bosa can get after him, that's going to be alarm bells. But if we can keep it close, I'm fairly optimistic that we can do something all right here.
Yeah, on Clowney though, because obviously one of the main points of contention on this defense and how much they're struggling. I mean, it's not at least their perception of their struggles. They are actually struggling. There was it DVOA is from 27th ranked in the league. We're in obviously with Sherman, Messers and all that, LOB over the last decade, really. They've been rarely out of the top 5 or 6. So they are struggling. But one point of that is they're not getting to the quarterback enough. But Clowney is one of those who's trying his damnedest and flashing. I mean, I was there a few weeks ago for the Ravens game, and it's just I think he got called offside 3 times in that game, at least twice. But even when he wasn't going called offside, it looked like you could see why the officials were flagging him, because his get off is just insane. He should not be able to move as quickly and as sharply and as effectively. There's no like wasted movements with him. Everything is with a purpose, and it's usually a purpose to end an offensive lineman, tight end, or running back's day, Adam.
Yeah, he's just so much fun to watch, and he's certainly a guy that we discussed on the Lost Tapes on Wednesday. That when you initially thought he would maybe be a rental when he came in case he doesn't perform well enough, but I think you could certainly say that he's played well enough to deserve serious consideration for a long term deal, unless he's looking for something, you know, absolutely absurd. But you know, I would quite happily give him Frank Clark money at the moment for what he's done so far.
Yeah, I'd agree. And also, as I tweeted the other day, I wouldn't be too displeased if they dive back into the first round defensive line bracket this year either, with a few people who are going to be in this next draft class. But yeah, but with behind Clowney, though, it is a bit of a mess, isn't it, really? But Bobby Wagner's tackling everyone. KJ Wright, I think, is it Bobby and KJ are in the top 4, top 5 in the league in tackles, but it's not great. And on Sunday, we saw Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, as effective a 1-2 wide receiver grouping as there is, just have their way and have all of the space all of the time, Adam.
Yeah, I kind of throw out games, not throw them out, but when someone like Mike Evans is playing like that he's got, and Jameis is on it. Like, Jameis and Evans are the perfect quarterback and wide receiver combo when they're both playing well, because Jameis just slings it up and Evans just goes and gets it. And I think, you know, we're probably just running through the schedule in my head for the rest of the way. We haven't got another Mike Evans on the schedule, I don't think. So that doesn't the back end doesn't concern me overly. The thing that concerns me more is, well, you know, the continuation of playing a lot of base defense, and Kendrick's not really doing much of what you want him to do. I think that especially saw itself in Atlanta, where it wasn't right. Hopefully Quandre Diggs comes and starts off and has a, you know, comes into the team today. But if Kittle's not there, it'll be interesting to see where we focus the defense, if they do want to get Kendricks on the field a bit more to try and stop the run, or if they do use a bit more nickel, which is what we've implored them to do recently, but I'm not sure will happen this week. But
no,
the front seven has been problematic. Yeah, the lack of sacks is, there's only so long where you can make excuses for it, and I think right now you have to say it's looking like a bit of a problem.
Yeah, but I think the thing with Kendricks is that it's just, he's being targeted and he's not really making, I mean, he made a play, I think, on Sunday, but he's not making a play to justify the fact he's being, I mean, it's going to get to the point where he's ahead of, well, a second round pick, and obviously the BBK seems kind of in the Shaquem Griffin special teams until we find someone to take over your role kind of thing. But with Kendricks and Barton, there's going to be a conversation if this issue continues, and obviously with Emmanuel Sanders on the other side of the ball, opposite him this weekend, you got Marquise Goodwin, who I think he's not on their injury report, so he's probably going to be there as well. Even without Kittle, this is an offense where Shanahan will put his guys, Sanders and Goodwin, 1-2 at that, in places to beat this secondary, and even if they do get lined up against Kendricks and the Jamar Taylors of the world, if they both play Adam.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dante Pettis is another guy who's not had the greatest season thus far, but we've seen him play. You know, you could put him in the slot, and if he's matched up against a linebacker and he can use his speed, that's probably would be quite a good way to get his season kick started, I would have thought.
Yeah, on the other side of the ball for the Seahawks, there's two or three threads coming from the last few weeks, but obviously the biggest one and the most headline making, headline grabbing, is the play of the quarterback. We've spoke, it seems, every week this season, every week for probably the last year or so, that he just continues to ascend and continues to get better and continues to impress and astound at certain points. But he is playing at a level, I mean, there's a few different people who break down film on Twitter who've pointed out how this Russell Wilson is almost the final form of Russell Wilson, Adam. And he's kind of, he's 1,300 yards away from breaking the pretty much the final quarterback franchise record he could, and passing the yardage Matt Hasselbeck had for this team, and he's doing it quicker and quickly and arguably more impressive in a team which has been, we've heard for so long, run heavy. To do it in the way and the speed he's doing it is incredibly impressive.
Yeah, I mean, year 8, 30 years old, I would imagine, and this is, I mean this only complimentarily, that I would imagine this is the best version of Russell Wilson you'll ever get to see. And he might stay like this for 5 years. I hope he does stay at this level for 5 years. But I can't really see many elements of the game that he could get a lot better in at this stage.
No, I mean, early in his career, he was quicker, but he's not being asked to do that as much as he was back then, is he? He's more...
It's that proper quarterbacking that we spoke about a couple of years ago. And I think we all, if I don't remember, I think we had Rob Staten on a couple of years ago, and we were talking about Wilson versus Tyrod Taylor, and how Wilson doesn't like to kind of run around all the time because it's not proper quarterbacking, but he still does it. Whereas now I feel like he is, it's proper quarterbacking the whole way through. He's climbing the pocket much better this year, which I think Alistair Court picked up on really well. And full credit has to go, much as we wouldn't have thought this, but to Brian Schottenheimer, who has probably, in fact, not probably, definitely been the best coach on the Seahawks staff this season so far by a mile.
Yeah, and he's definitely putting his name in the bracket for the coaching carousel once that kicks off on Black Monday after week 17. I mean, he's definitely put the certain jobs which would seem, the work he's done with Wilson to get him improving as he is, would definitely put him in a place for certain jobs on the Ohio River, wouldn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, if I were him, I don't know what his aspirations are in life, but I think I'd rather go the Josh McDaniels route and be Russell Wilson's kind of caller for as long as you can, because he's, what, 40 years old, Schottenheimer, if that? He's got a long time to earn a lot of money coaching crap teams when he wants to kind of do that. If I were him, I'd strap my cart to the horse that is Russell Wilson and ride that for as long as I can, to be honest, because that there's a guy that makes you, that obviously you're coaching very well, but he's going to make you look very good for a long time.
Yeah, I think no quarterback's done that to his OC more than Tom Brady has, because I'm not sure McDaniels is much cop. Obviously behind Russell Wilson, I mean, Russell Wilson's play, a lot of that is to do with the guys he's threading the ball in through eye of a needle to more often than not. And the top one of that, if not, he's some remarkably still underrated, is Tyler Lockett. And he's, as we say with Russell Wilson, year on year ascending and improving, Tyler Lockett is arguably doing it even better and at a faster rate and a more impressive rate, Adam.
He's been sensational. I've never been more wrong about any Seahawks player than Tyler Lockett. I thought he was just a guy, and he's turned into an absolute sensation. At the minute, he's top five wide receiver in the NFL, which is just not what I would have expected at all. And no. I said again in the lost tapes, I asked you the question that a friend of mine said that or asked me who had the better connection. Did I think Wilson and Baldwin or Wilson and Lockett? And I think you can certainly make the comparison between the two. I would say that Baldwin was probably more of a safety blanket for Wilson, but from an explosive standpoint, I think Lockett has got the edge on it now.
Yeah, Baldwin and Russell was kind of like, they knew, Wilson knew where Baldwin was, and it was usually enough to get a first down. I mean, there was not many. Well, maybe the only one I can think of is the Pittsburgh one, the one in the Super Bowl where it's yards after catch, getting a touchdown kind of thing from Baldwin. But yeah, as you say, with Lockett, I mean, his horrible leg injury, 3 years ago? Is it his rookie year? I mean, that could be end. That's all, folks, kind of thing on player's career. But it already is. It's going to be even more of a footnote to his career when it could kind of like just been the reason his career was curtailed or had a ceiling to it. He's kind of left it behind and made it a footnote on everything else and what he's doing. I mean, his everything he's putting on, his pace he's on, his yards per game, his yards per reception, the touchdown catches, everything is on pace to be unlike anything this team has seen before. What has come before, and especially with the recent history with Doug Baldwin, is impressive and a massive, massive credit to Tyler Lockett, isn't it?
100%. He has really just completely I'm not sure he's turned himself around. I turned it around because he was never bad, but he, from that injury that he had, when you could easily have kind of almost written a guy off with an injury that bad. But we've mentioned a few times on the pod that, you know, you can have the size, you can have the speed, but route running is so key, and especially for a quarterback like Wilson to build that trust. And he's just so clean in what he's doing now. And there was a play, I think, where the ball, I think, went over Lockett's head by about 15 yards in the Tampa game, and it was like a surprise because it was the first time that they'd actually missed one. You just don't expect to see it because they've just become such a great partnership together. And long may that continue.
Yeah, well, another part of the offense and the reason that Wilson is chasing down rapidly the passing yard mark for the Seahawks is the emergence, and probably quicker than anyone could have imagined, bar probably DK Metcalf himself. Metcalf is proven, when you said you were wrong about Tyler Lockett, I may have been a bit wrong about DK Metcalf, because is how they handle him in the first month of the season compared to how they're kind of bringing him through ever increasing speed, especially this past Sunday, is one, impressive and encouraging, but also exciting for what the future may hold for this Seahawks offense, and Russell Wilson playing at a level which, as you say, you'd hope would be a 4 or 5 year window for him to play at this level with these guys is something to get. You could allow yourself to get a bit carried away with, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, there was the... We said a couple of weeks ago, I think, before the Cleveland game, that we'd love to see him do a bit more than just run in a straight line from the left. And that touchdown against Tampa is a speed and a turn of corner that I don't think we've seen as Seahawks fans. Certainly not... I can't remember seeing it. It was amazing. And, you know, he doesn't need to be the cleanest guy if you've got Lockett there. He just needs to be a guy that can do that. And he's probably going to get 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns this season the way it's going, which would be probably Rookie of the Year candidacy. He's not going to get it, but Offensive Rookie of the Year candidacy, like, he'd have to be in the conversation if he does something like that, because that would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I mean we've got a chance where we're going to have two receivers get over 1,000 yards, so I don't think that may not have ever happened before with the Seahawks. I think Baldwin was the last 1,000-yard receiver when he got all the touchdowns in 2014, 15, when he got like 17 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the last one we had. Before that, it was a long, long time ago. So the fact that we got two guys hurtling towards that, and also remember we had Will Disley, who was playing at a level for the first month of the season, which was the top of the top at his position as well. This offense, as you say, all comes back to guy calling the plays somewhat strangely, and it's time. I think a lot of the fan base is in the process of doing a pretty swift 180 on this side of the ball, and it's every aspect of the offense that I can think of is encouraging when you look at the players they're going to add to the 53 man this weekend, and maybe the active roster on Monday night. I don't know, with a couple of guys in particular.
Yeah, it's just amazing that the offense has been so much better than this year. I mean, the progression since last season has been so stark, and you know, we were pulling our hair out 12 months ago at this stage, and now it's remarkable that I think we're number 3 in DVOA offense and 27th in defense, which is just the last thing you'd expect from a Pete Carroll led team.
For so long, Pete Carroll's been about DBs, and rightly so, with all the work he's done and all the players he's brought through. Not just in here, but all through his coaching career. But now it's on the offense, and it's more a very Kevin Keegan-esque, we're going to score more than you, and a pure confidence in doing that every week, isn't it?
100%. And I still believe that in the modern NFL, there's only so much that a defense can carry you through. Maybe in a one-off game in a Super Bowl, yes. But during the regular season, you need to be able to score points. And, you know, in these road games, you know, the Cowboys game last year is a fine example. We just dropped the ball completely on offense, and in a game that we really should have won. And so the fact that they're turning into a team that can be much better offensively is really pleasing, and probably a couple of years too late.
That almost certainly. And I think that's one person we're going to see this weekend on the other sidelines. He probably has a pretty key complaint on that. But I mean, you look back at last Super Bowl. It was, it was a pretty terrible game for like neutrals and everything, and people who only watch Super Bowl once every year, watch sport once every year. But the reason New England won that more than anything is because their two best players on offense made a play, isn't it? Tom Brady although it was low scoring, it did all come down, and the difference was offense, because the offense for New England had better players making the plays than the Rams did, which is a surprise to not very few, Adam.
100%. And you're right. When the play needed to be made, it was offensively versus defensively, and I think that's probably the way of the modern NFL. And, you know, we've not even mentioned the fact that the team have added Josh Gordon this week, and to have him as a third receiver, you know, could, I'm not saying it will do, but could make this, you know, one of the best passing offenses in the league, which is a startling thing to say.
Yeah, and also with Josh Gordon is without probably a lot less razzmatazz, but in name value alone, he is the clowny addition on the offense, isn't he? I mean, if you're picking a six-a-side team 3 or 4 years ago, Clowny and Gordon are both on it, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. And he doesn't, from all you read about him as a guy, he doesn't come across like a bad person. No one seems to have a bad word to say about him, you know, as a locker room guy. He's not an AB kind of like a distraction or a difficult bloke. I think he's just had his issues. And
I would happily, considering the team aren't giving up anything for him, really, I'm very happy to see the team take a chance on someone like that, because what have you got to lose?
Yeah. I mean, it's the pictures from him. There's a picture, I think, the Seahawks themselves posted, where the referees are watching. There's referees at practice, and they're watching him run by, and it's just a clear. It's like palpable awe in how this bloke, this behemoth of a bloke, is moving. And you put him next to. I mean, imagine the like trips out wide of Lockett, Gordon, and Metcalf. It's gonna look absolutely ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be great to watch.
Well, one other aspect of the offense over the last few weeks, all through the 2019 season, really, after another 100-yard game against the Buccaneers, which was highlighted by an impressive, which could have gone from hero to zero if the ball had bounced a bit differently once he got bashed out of town by Devin White. Chris Carson-Adam continues to set the tone, and he's breaking tackles at a faster rate than Marshawn Lynch did in that 2013-14 run that this team had, Adam.
Yeah, I'm not overly fussed about the fumbles. Like, I know they're obviously an issue and it can't continue, but what are you going to do? Like, he's the only guy you've got that is going to carry the load. And I still think overall the net positive that he's giving you is miles better than the negative of, you know, one loss of the ball in the last 4 weeks for the team. So, you know, it's annoying, but every running back fumbles, really, at the minute. So it is what it is, and it's just not something I'm going to get too het up about. And his performances so far, he's getting way too many touches, which is an issue going forward that needs watching. But ultimately, I think you take the rough with the smooth on that, and you just accept it and get on with it, really.
Yeah, but I think in the early part of the season it was an issue because obviously in closed games and the team was struggling, especially after the Saints game, it was more of a pertinent issue. But yeah, on Sunday it was just kind of one of those things, and 59-yard run, was it 22 mile an hour, I think, Devin White was clocked at running, which is just ridiculous for a human being to run at. I mean, it's like Michael Scott in The Office running past the speedometer. This is one of those things. But again, the same similar Metcalf, how Pete Carroll clearly, and maybe all the coaches, but Pete Carroll most obviously probably being the head coach and the one asked most often about him and the perceived issues, how they dealt with him through that end of September up until what the Ravens game was kind of the question started. He started to really kick up a gear, but how they dealt with it isn't just another feather to the bow of Pete Carroll, who, I mean, I think goes underappreciated somewhat the job he does off camera, off the sideline kind of thing, in that building Monday to Saturday or Tuesday to Monday, as it is this week, I don't know.
Yeah, 100%. Couldn't
have been. One, obviously, the main talking points, our pal Mike Dugar has been posting under the hashtag Richard Sherman Revenge Week, and some pretty funny if you take Sherman at what he's basically trying to do and just work himself up, as Bobby Wagner pointed out yesterday. Richard Sherman is he had a bit of a highlight play against the Cardinals when Andy Isabella ran past him and he barely got a sniff on him, but he's playing at a level it's just the Richard Sherman level, and he's still one of the best, if not the best, at his position in this league. And at his age and after the injury he's been through, it's remarkable. And he's going to be someone that Russell Wilson's going to have to, he's fully going to know he's there, but he's going to particularly know who he's there to keep this just one interception number going, isn't he?
Yeah, I can't imagine they're going to throw the ball away from him particularly. But there's been some mixed reports about, you know, maybe he plays quite soft coverage because he's not got that kind of burner speed that he used to, but he's obviously got the three picks and the passer rating against is very low. I would still like to think that Wilson can find a way to beat Sherman. You know, it's not the Sherman 2015, but that would always be my last read on the field, because especially as Sherman knows Wilson so well and probably knows his tendencies better than anyone.
Yeah, and also we spoke about it the other day, which no one else is going to hear until now, but the one type of player that Sherman has always struggled with is that shiftier type, and he's kind of matched up well against the big behemoth, so it might be interesting to see how they line up Lockett, and even when they target Lockett and maybe get Metcalf and Josh Gordon and whoever else more on Akella Witherspoon on the opposite side, or whoever plays opposite Sherman on Sunday.
Mm, Yeah, 100%. It's I think our passing offense against their passing defense is the most interesting matchup of the day, and I think that's probably where the game is going to be won and lost.
Yeah, there's a lot more ingredients in the recipe to how that could go awfully, awfully wrong for the Seahawks on Monday. But I think that's everything, every other aspect of it. But Kyle Shanahan and Pete Carroll, I mean, everyone's talking uprightly, Kyle Shanahan, but as coach, yeah, but if Pete Carroll gets his team over the perceived line this year, Adam, he's, again, deserves a hell of a lot of credit, and it's, I mean, the seventh win on Sunday means every year he's been in Seattle, the team has won at least seven games, which is a remarkable run of unheralded for the Seahawks team's consistency and success, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as a bit of devil's advocacy, it wouldn't stun me if there were quite a few fans that, you know, do crunch the tape and the numbers and say that the Seahawks are kind of winning games in spite of poor head coaching. I don't necessarily agree with that, but there does seem to be more of an anti-Pete Carroll sentiment than there this year than there ever has been before, which is interesting, if nothing else. But yeah, I mean, I think we said if the Seahawks make the playoffs, he should be coach of the year, given the general lack of talent on the roster compared to others. And I still think that's probably true. Although there are people like Sean Payton and John Harbaugh that are making, very, very strong cases to suggest that should be their award. Not that it really matters anyway.
No, yeah, it's like I think we said to each other about Russell Wilson, the MVP, it's more of a legacy thing, isn't it? Having that on your, like in baseball, they have all the gold gloves and they give them to absolutely everyone. So when you hear gold glove, you kind of think, oh, cool. Then you actually look into how many people win a gold glove every year. It's kind of, oh, okay. No, that's not that meaningful apart from having it on your Hall of Fame plaque 5 years after you retire. Confidence, score prediction, Adam?
I think we're going to lose, unfortunately. But I think it's going to be close. I think a 6-point loss. I'm going to go 30-24 to San Francisco.
Yeah, I think we're going to lose. I think in our pick-em thing, because it's Monday night, so it's tie-break, so I think I've got 34-30 to the Niners. I think they're going to make one more play than our defense is going to make a play, I think. I think our offense will stack up fine. Bose is probably going to get in there. If Carson gets 100 yards, I think the Seahawks win. Because I think Armstead and Buckner are going to be an issue. And they just have to be Oregon Ducks, makes it a little bit worse as well. But I think 34-30, I think the 49ers offense is going to make one more play than our defense is. But I'll happily be wrong. And if they are entering the bye week at 8-2, just was it one or half a game behind the Niners? And obviously, then we've got all the primetime games the other side of the bye week, Adam.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun end of the year. Good to watch.
Yeah. One more thing we did talk about the other day, which we, as we keep saying, lost. The Seahawks have a bad kicking situation, but the Niners kicking situation, and possibly worse. Robbie Gould has missed 7, I think it is, field goals this year, and he's injured. And I mean, again, Mike Dugas says never kick. They might actually do that on Sunday, Monday night, Adam.
Well, that's certainly the way I would go forward. We discussed this at too much length, and I can't get hot about Jason Myers again. Almost, it's probably for the best of the podcast that has been lost. But never kick could be a great strategy for both teams. I certainly wouldn't want to see us lining up any kind of field goal pretty much anywhere on the field, to be honest.
It's usually good week, bad week, because we've been off a few weeks. Adam, good month, bad month, and for whom?
I'm going to go a very, 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 very good month for Lamar Jackson. I think he came into the last month people thinking, he's obviously good and whatever, but is he really at that level? And I think what he's proven in the last, against the Patriots, is that he is the real deal. And teams are going to have to find a way to stop him, and they might find a way to stop him or to stop this version of him. But I think the way he's playing, I think he looks good enough that he can adapt and go again.
Yeah, I think we spent the last 20 minutes or so praising Pete Carroll for all aspects of things, but how John Harbaugh switched the offense up after Joe Flacco, I mean, it's a completely different animal that offense is, and it's still a pretty decent, pretty higher level defense, but how they completely switched everything up on the fly last year, and they've kind of clearly spent the offseason putting people like Marquise Brown. Mark Andrews has took a step forward as well this year. It's a proper impressive coaching job what John Harbaugh's done, when really 12 months ago he was on a rather warm seat in Maryland, Adam.
100%. I think 50 weeks ago they were talking about how his time, they'd mutually agreed to cut with him. It just shows what an amazing difference that a year's made. That, you know, he bins off Flacco, goes to Lamar Jackson, gets Greg Roman, who's done an unbelievable job as offensive coordinator, and now they look unstoppable.
Good week or good month for me. This probably not one person been a good month for it. Probably could be even a better month this weekend when they play Alabama. Joe Burrow, in drafts put ways, no one has made a bigger jump, especially as a quarterback, has made a bigger jump than he has. It's looking increasingly likely that he's going to be the first. It's going to be the first overall pick. It's just from how he looked last year is unbelievable. But in NFL circles, it's been a good month. I mean, it's boring to go with the quarterback again, but Deshaun Watson. It all really started with Deshaun Watson when he did that press conference when he was asked the question. He broke everything down for the journalists. Obviously, everyone's initial reaction was that he was being off and a bit harsh on the journalists, but it took all as it was meant, and he continued to do that. But also, his players at a level. I mean, he's dragging that team through this season because his O-line is, while it's improved over the last month, is not great. It's I mean, Deshaun Watson, every turn he's doing his thing, and he impressed again at Wembley, which is obviously not the greatest place to show your mettle and show your worth, but he did on Sunday, and he's in that conversation with Lamar and our Russ, isn't he, Adam?
I mean, it's amazing. It's really cool that the four leaders in the MVP race, I think, are Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, and Dak Prescott, four black quarterbacks. Yeah. It's just not something you'd ever expect to see. And the other guy is a white running back in McCaffrey. So it just shows how funny the league can be sometimes.
Yeah. Bad month for Adam?
The Browns.
Yeah.
Compounded by that loss to Denver. You could kind of say, well, you know, they're 2-5 or whatever, or 3-5 coming off a loss to the Patriots, where they looked okay and they beat themselves, really. And then that loss to Denver is just awful. Really, really bad. And then that's going to compound Freddie Kitchens and probably cost him his job, I would imagine, in the next fortnight, to be honest.
Yeah, I can't remember a time, I mean, well, to go from Hugh Jackson to Freddie Kitchens, I mean, they're both equally out of their depth. I mean, Kitchens was given the job because of how he worked with Mayfield last year, but he's not been able to work with the 52 other guys and just not getting the ball to OBJ, which is just bizarre. They've only really lost on the offensive side and Njoku for the season when he wasn't exactly setting the world alight, but this whole way of it. I mean, they've got Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams back a couple of weeks ago. That hasn't really made any difference. And they just, as you say, cannot get out their own way. I mean, everyone talks about the penalties the Seahawks give up. They think they're on a pace to break every record. And it's double figures every week. And when you're a struggling team, a struggling offense especially, it's not great, as we've seen in the last couple of years with this last Seahawks.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think that's very well put. And you know, they've got so much talent there, and they have probably got two more years of not having to worry about finances and getting it right. But they really, really do need to get it right now, because they're in full win now mode, and they're not winning.
No, they're not. My bad month is probably going to go to another quarterback, Cam Newton, who just feels like Doug Baldwin 12 months ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I never really thought about that it could be kind of his long-term future in doubt. I kind of saw it more as he's got a couple of, you know, he's basically a year and a half off. Hopefully he can get himself right. He's not being paid massive money, which a lot of people thought initially, myself included, that was a good reason to cut ties because there's so little dead money. But actually, it's as good a reason to keep him around, because you're not paying him that much. You're going to pay your whole quarterback room
$20 million or so next year if you keep Cam and Kyle Allen around and you've got Greer, the rookie. So I'm not willing to write it off just yet because I think there might be a way that, if he's not going to play for 11 more, 10 more months, he can really get himself right. But it's a shame because the way the game's being played right now perfectly suits his style. He doesn't get to play in it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Cam Newton, even if he isn't doing much, I kind of feel like he may be. I think maybe not DeBoer Moore, Andrew Luck kind of deal. But how good he was when he first entered the league. I mean, someone posted the roster, the Auburn team he dragged to a national title in college football. You look at the star power of Alabama, LSU, Oregon, Georgia, Ohio State this year, and you go and look at the team and he's literally the only name on that who made any imprint on the league after that, really. I mean, I don't think he's anyone who did anything in the league apart from Cam Newton. So he's just consistently won for all of his football career. And the fact he's probably not going to be able to play at the level and the style and the way and I mean, he gets a lot of grief for how he looks and how he dresses and how he conducts himself in his earlier part of his career. But that couple of years when he was winning MVP and getting that team to the Super Bowl, there's few players as fun to watch for me anyway as Cam Newton. He's unlikely to ever get back to that level. And that's probably the biggest shame of the lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a shame that he never really got a chance to play with great players around him, and now he could feasibly have that. You kind of feel it's a bit of a shame if he's not going to get a chance to play.
I think that's everything. Obviously, the Seahawks after Monday night are on bye. Then they have three more primetime games the other side of it against Philly, Minnesota, and the LA Rams. If you want to get involved with the podcast, we do urge you to, and you can on all the usual means and methods. The Pedestrian Podcast on Facebook, UK Seattle Seahawks fans on Facebook, at Seahawkers UK on Twitter. But I think that is everything. Adam, wherever you watch the game from on Monday night or Tuesday morning for us on this side of the Atlantic, enjoy, and hopefully the Seahawks will be one game closer to catching our opponent on Monday night, the 49ers. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks!
Tyler Lockett is ridiculous. He's so good. You know, 13 catches today and a lot of tough things and all of, again, a variety of things that he did, the touchdown passes too. But just an amazing player that he is, just continues to be just marvelous to watch. And so we're fortunate. We're all fortunate to be watching these games.